This is Soundside. I'm Libby Denkman.
This is the story of Airplane. Of over 95,000 people. Together, they make up the largest aerospace company in the world, the Boeing Company.
In 1980, Deborah Ulrich worked as a floater at Boeing's now defunct electronics manufacturing facility. Back then, it was located on the east side of Boeing Field. She had a variety of tasks, dipping soldering boards in industrial solvents to clean them and touching up patterns on circuit boards, among other duties. She was also pregnant with her daughter, Marie Riley.
Fumes drifted from the manufacturing area where tank lines pumped chemical baths. A degreasing machine heated chemical solvents, giving rise to hot vapors that would clean circuit boards. Chromic acid, a type of hexavalent chromium, was used as an etching agent to carve out circuit boards.
That's Everett Herald investigative reporter Rachel Riley. Her new report details the allegations of three families, including Deborah Ulrich's, who believe their children's congenital medical conditions are the result of exposure to toxic chemicals and heavy metals at Boeing plants. The families are suing Boeing for failing to protect workers. Rachel says internal documents show that Boeing leaders were warned about the potential risks of chemical exposure going back as far as March 18, 1980, when Dr. Barry Dunphy, Boeing's occupational health manager, had a meeting with then-Boeing president Malcolm Stamper.
Dr. Barry Dunphy was gutsy enough to tell the company's president at the time that the company really needed to improve its health and safety program, specifically as it pertained to chemical exposure of workers. Dunphy was basically advocating for a stronger program in what's called industrial hygiene. And he wanted to see more chemical labeling and more employee training, more monitoring. And specifically, he wanted all of those health and safety functions to be happening in Boeing's medical department because, you know, chemical exposure is really a medical issue. And so his message to the president at the time was, you know, look, this is happening right now. People don't know it's happening, and it's happening on a really, really big scale. This is, you know, tens of thousands of workers who are potentially being exposed here.
And you know this because you've obtained a trove of internal Boeing documents that have been part of discovery in the lawsuits that have been filed by three families of Boeing workers. Who are these families and what do they say happened to them?
So there's two who have ties to the Everett plant, two fathers who were mechanics there, or one of them actually still works at the plant, who had children in the 2010s and in the 1990s who have significant birth defects. One of the children, Tiana Hadelberg, she's now 28, and she has developmental and physical disabilities that basically keep her from living a normal life. And then the other young lady is 9, and she has a rare genetic disorder that will essentially require 24/7 care for the rest of her life. The third plaintiff is an adult now. Her name's Marie Riley, and she was actually born with a heart defect that has required 2 open heart surgeries and, I mean, really a lifetime of cardiology appointments. Her mother, Deborah Ulrich, worked at a Seattle area factory for Boeing in the 1980s.
And as you say, there is a big range in ages here of the children potentially affected. How long was this exposure allegedly going on, and how many workers have possibly been affected?
Oh, that's the big question. It's really hard to quantify. It was, you know, 1970 where the country really started having a conversation about sort of workplace health and safety as a result of the passage of the Occupational Safety and Health Act of 1970. And, you know, it really took Boeing more than a decade to really come up with strong programs to do that. Those programs have improved over the years. And, you know, we've definitely become more aware of the impacts and potential impacts of these sort of harmful chemicals in the workplace. But it is really hard to say who could it be potentially affected by this, just because there are so many of these chemicals in use, and a lot of them haven't even been studied to determine, you know, whether they can cause reproductive harm.
Let's talk about those chemicals. What are we referring to when we talk about the exposure that potentially made people sick at the Boeing plant? And are some of the chemicals still present at these factories?
Yeah, absolutely. So the big ones that we know about and the ones that are highlighted in the lawsuit would be organic solvents, which is a big class of chemicals, but there are a few specific kinds like toluene, benzene, xylene, and methylpropyl ketone. Those are some of the chemicals that, you know, we know have adverse effects that are still pretty widely used today. And, you know, we also have some heavy metals too. Chromium is a big one in Boeing's Everett plant. Hexavalent chromium is used in the chromium plating process. That's a pretty long established industrial poison. It's a known carcinogen. So there are a lot of really stringent rules around the way it's used today, but it is one of those that people tend to know. It's also the chemical in Erin Brockovich. So for the average person, that's how you might know it.
Yeah, and there was this practice that basically involved spraying a compound of chemicals, including chromium. And you talk about this testimony in some of the depositions that have been obtained by you in these lawsuits of this green mist in the air in some of the plants. What was that? And is that still a practice at the Boeing plants?
Yeah, so it's called BMS 1011. It's a type of primer, and I believe that it actually still is used today. It's used in different manners that are considered a little safer. Historically, Boeing employees did use it with these things called pre-valves, which you would basically attach to the chemical containers and spray primer onto, you know, the plane or parts of the plane. So this stuff was really just going into the air, and Boeing has said in the case that it phased out this practice of using pre-valves, especially for this particular primer, in 1990, because employees just could not control how much of this stuff was being emitted into the air. And a lot of that work was done, you know, by people who weren't wearing respirators or around people who weren't wearing respirators, at least historically. So there was very little, you know, protection to prevent them from inhaling this.
These are very serious allegations from these families who have filed lawsuits and their attorneys. What is Boeing saying about all of this?
So Boeing has declined to comment on the allegations. I asked if they could comment in general on their practices for keeping employees safe, and they, you know, haven't been willing to speak to me about this. I've done the best I could to sort of reconstruct the arguments they have made during the discovery process in court. They have had, you know, worker training programs and chemical labeling programs that have really become stronger, you know, throughout the past 40 years. It is still just, you know, there are so many chemicals in use in their factories, and all of these chemicals sort of have different, you know, potential health impacts. And, you know, there's a different level of awareness of the health impacts depending on what kind of chemical it is. So Boeing basically does its best to tailor the warnings and trainings that different employees receive about chemical risks to exactly what they do on the job, what processes they use, and what chemicals are used.
And I think your story highlights a really important reality here, and that's the disconnect between policy and what actually happens on a factory floor. How is that playing out here?
Yeah, so these factories obviously are very big. You know, like I have said, you have a lot of different products in use. You have a lot of different people who are working long hours. They're doing really, you know, difficult manual labor. And you probably have, you know, relatively few supervisors and managers on shop floors at a given point. And so some of what has surfaced during discovery is that, you know, these managers aren't necessarily able to enforce safety rules, you know, all the time. And so these rules written in handbooks and, you know, sort of these warnings posted at factories, it's unclear if that is actually how things are playing out in reality day to day in these really, really busy and hectic environments.
Yeah. Do you take time to stop and read a handbook or double check a warning label when you're trying to get stuff done? You know, proving a direct link between exposure to chemicals and birth defects later on, that cannot be an easy process. How are plaintiffs and their attorneys trying to prove causation here?
Yeah, so the firm that is representing the plaintiffs, Waters, Cross & Paul, actually specializes in this type of litigation. And you're right, it is so complicated. You know, I would say it's nearly impossible. I mean, the way it is usually addressed in these types of trials is there's genetic testing and there's lots of different experts that, you know, testify during discovery to whether or not there could be a link. On the plaintiff side in this case, in addition to geneticists who are interpreting testing results, you also have, I think there's a neuropsychologist. There is an industrial hygienist who is a sort of person who analyzes workplace risk and chemical risks. And then you also have, you know, just people like regular medical doctors. And, you know, together, that's how they sort of make the argument of, you know, not only is this something that could have been caused by a chemical exposure, but, you know, this was caused by chemical exposure. And here, you know, here is how it happened. It was these specific chemicals that these parents worked with in the factories, you know, in the 1980s and so on. So, you know, obviously that is the tall task that they will have to accomplish to sort of prove this claim.
And they're also going to have to prove that Boeing was negligent here, right? That the company knew the extent of the risks and didn't take steps to mitigate them. How much have you learned in your reporting about what Boeing knew and when?
Yeah, so I mean, that really is the focus of these documents. These documents are, for the most part, you know, scientific literature that was in Boeing's toxicology library and, you know, also the company's own internal memos and writings and reports about specific chemicals and their risks, you know, as far back as 1980. But, you know, really up until the 2000s, they maintained a list specifically of chemicals that were of concern for harmful reproductive effects. So, you know, even that type of risk specifically, they were tracking for decades. So that is really, you know, one of the themes of these documents that have surfaced in discovery is that they knew the whole time, or at least that, you know, high level health and safety and medical officials at the company were aware of the writing about this and the general scientific knowledge about this.
Marie Riley, who was born with a congenital heart defect, has already settled with Boeing. Two other plaintiffs, their lawsuits are ongoing. What's next in these cases?
So in the two other lawsuits, we do know from the motion that was filed in court recently that settlement discussions are ongoing in those lawsuits. There are some facts, I think, that are contested in those two cases still. So, you know, I think there is a chance we could see those go to trial. And so the discovery process is ongoing. Both sides are still engaged in deposing experts, and gathering information to prove their claims. That is sort of what we will be seeing happening over the next few months.
This is just three families that have come forward with these lawsuits. But if their allegations are true, I mean, there's tens of thousands of people who have come through in similar jobs that would have potentially had these same exposure risks, again, if the allegations are true. So what happens if these do go forward, go to trial, there is some kind of liability proven against Boeing? I mean, doesn't that just expose the company to so many more cases of potential lawsuits?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is really the truly scary part of this, is that, you know, the fear that there are more. And when Dr. Dunphy gave his presentation in 1980, you know, he put a number on it. He said that we're talking about, you know, 30,000 employees potentially exposed, and about 1,500 of them a year that, you know, would be seriously damaged by this exposure. So if that's the case, it could definitely become, you know, a big problem for the company. You know, there's evidence in the documents that the company has had liability concerns in the past when it comes to chemical exposure and its workers. So I think we'll just have to see what happens.
That was Rachel Riley, investigative reporter for the Everett Herald. You can find her reports on Boeing at the Herald's website. Thanks for listening to Soundside. Don't forget you can listen live on KUOW 94.9 Seattle at noon and 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday, or anytime right here online at KUOW.org, or of course on your favorite podcast app.